I'll be talking tonight in English, and the subject is expectation and trust. We probably come to the retreat with quite a lot of different thoughts about what we want to happen, what we'd like to come out of the retreat with, what we want to learn here. Or the reverse, what we don't want to happen, what we're a bit afraid of, what we want to run away from. And this is whether we're new to this practice or whether we're old timers after many hours on the cushion. We still have these narratives running through. Oh, my back hurts and I'm not doing, it's not working for me, and I expected to see the white light and all I see is shoulder pain and neck pain and back pain and there's no light. Or the reverse, I always have terrible pains, and retreat, Vipassana retreats are all about painful body sitting and it's not happening. Where's it gone? Where's my pains disappeared? And that's a very cheap and easy way to feel great. So we're full of expectations. I remember my first retreats with Goenka, where I was really struggling to kind of fine-tune the practice and really feel small sensations like the differences between one finger and the other finger, and of course I couldn't, and it was a struggle, and all the wonderful talks of Goenka, I began to get more angry. I decided that my brain was totally messed up, and I blamed my parents for messing up my mind so I can't feel my finger sensations properly. I blame my school, I blame my education, I got more and more pissed off about the whole thing. I thought that I'd been, the life had turned me into a fool, basically. And education had turned me into a fool, like one of the songs. But basically, our expectations, which are there with us all the time, whether we're on a retreat or not, are about getting somewhere else, are about going from where we are to where we want to be, basically going from where we are to where we are not. And that's a puzzle. And the expectations themselves, which we all have, I want to be better. I want to be a better person. I want to get rid of suffering, pain, and difficulty. I want to get clarity. I want to awaken. I want to reduce the amount of pain and suffering, conflict, difficulty, argument, etc. in my life. All of these wish lists that we carry with us in our pocket, kind of wish list, they're all based on getting from where we are to where we are not in the future. And they're all about measuring what we want to be based on what we know already about ourselves and about the life. They're not really about being somewhere else, which we have no idea what it's like. We really have no idea what we're going to be like in 5 days at the end of the retreat. We really, really don't know what we're going to be like in 5 minutes. Deeply, we don't know. So the only way we can kind of try and be somewhere else is by measuring where we are and by kind of the usual mind, which checks out where we are and where we want to be. That's the usual mind. But somewhere or other, we came here to get out of the usual mind. It's the usual mind that's the mind that's giving us problems in life. It's the usual mind which is the mind of the consensus world that we live in, the consumer mind and the struggling mind and the anxiety mind and the pushing mind and the running mind and the functioning mind and the automatic world mind. That's the same usual mind. And it's that usual mind that we want to get rid of. We want to go beyond. So we're in the Dharma offers us a way to go beyond the usual mind, the usual tracks. But we should remember that the expectations and the world of I want to be better are the usual tracks. It's the only thing we know. That's what we are. So here's a paradox. And the Dharma comes along and says, yes, we use the usual mind to go beyond the usual mind. We use what we are to go beyond what we are. But we have to have different ways to do it, which is why we meditate. If we are using the usual tools of the usual mind, for example, trying to work out by thinking how we can be different, you know how difficult that is. We can think and think and think and think and think and fantasy and fantasy and fantasy and fantasize how much we want to be somebody else, how much we want to be better, and the fruit of it is often quite limited, to say the least. And often we just get ourselves paralyzed in all kinds of loops and confusions about how we want to be somebody else. So the usual mind doesn't have a good track record, actually, of a real profound change. Therefore, we need to go beyond. And therefore, we do things which are not the usual mind, like meditating instead of trying to think it all out. Nothing wrong with thinking, but it's just that we believe that thinking, the usual mind says, I can solve everything by thinking. That's what the usual mind says. And we find ourselves in the same place again and again and again. So we need to do something unusual, but use the usual mind for this. And one of the things that we need is a source of motivation for this. We need to begin to make a jump. We need to move. We need to move. And if we don't rely on expectation to help us to move, what will make us move? If expectations are not very reliable, so what is it? How can we gain the motivation to make the jump? There is a word in the tradition called samvega, and it means spiritual urgency. It's dachuf. And very often the urgency comes from pain, from suffering, from a sense, I can't put up with this anymore. Things can't go on the way they are. I can't carry on with this usual mind anymore. And that sense of, I must change somewhere, the urgency, very often with coming from acknowledgement of pain, dissatisfaction, frustration, is actually our friend, this urgency. It's a source of motivation. It's a source of power, in a way. Sometimes this urgency goes into belief. And we get attracted to very strong beliefs. And we think, well, that will solve the problem. We believe in a guru, we believe in a book, we believe in God. We believe in Messiah, Mashiach, whatever. And it feels like we got somewhere. And sometimes it does give us a lot of energy. But the Buddha was very careful about this. And I think we ought to be a little careful too. That belief can create for us another prison. It's dependent. And you know how difficult it is when people, for example, believe in a God or in the Buddha and then suffer. And then they feel God has let them down, or the Buddha's let them down if you're in the East. And belief is a very double-edged sword, and often too crude, too dependent. Flut. If you believe, you're a believer, everything looks great, but is it really? And really, what has happened? So it's often an unreliable source for change, belief. And instead, the Buddha suggested the power of trust. Trust in the Pali language is sadha. Trust is translated as a place to put your heart. Where you put your heart. You place your heart in something. You place your heart in your practice. You place your heart in your life. You place your heart in a direction. So this is the quality of sadha. And it's an energy. Sadha is an energy. Trust is an energy. Trust is not about expectation. Trust is in the now. It's an energy that is instead of belief, expectation, and I want to be there, which we don't know where that is. It's an energy in the present. It's in the process of our practice. And the power of trust is that process which moves us, which generates our path, which brings us to new things, which brings us to new understanding. It's the power behind wisdom. It's the power behind our practice. If we don't have the trust, things are very wobbly. Everything can knock us down. We don't know where we're going. We can get very confused. So trust is a power that clarifies and gives us a way, a forward. And it's not about expectations. It's right now, in the present. Feeling of trust. And trust is not about measuring with the usual mind. There's a story in the traditional text of the Buddha who met a Jain. And the Jain, like one of the Indian yogis, you maybe met them before, was very ascetic, and he'd been standing for 10 years on one leg. And the Buddha met him, and he was standing there on one leg. The other leg had got completely withered, useless. And the Buddha said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm standing on one leg as an ascetic practice to burn up my karma." What are you doing that? Ascetic sagphanut. What are you doing that for? I want to become liberated and finish all my bad karma. Oh. How much bad karma have you got rid of in 10 years? Jane said, "I really don't know. Can't tell you." How much longer do you have to stand on one leg in order to finish the process? The giant said, I really don't know. I can't tell you. How will you know when it's done? I really don't know. I can't tell you. So the Buddha said, maybe you think about doing something else. This is a story about measuring. We really can't base what we're doing on the usual mind, which is a mind of measuring or trying to measure, which is completely impossible. Trying to measure where we were, what was wrong, where we want to be, and what expectations we have there, somewhere else. That measuring simply doesn't work. Instead of that, asking the question, okay, we're here. We're right here in the present moment. We're right here in our life. We have one precious moment in this body, on this planet. Not long. One precious moment we have to live. Now what? Good question. Sorry to throw it at you. The answer is we are here. There's not an answer really, but should we say a direction? We are here in a process of discovery. And the process of discovery needs trust. To look where we are and not to try and be somewhere else. We are here to discover. We are here actually to enjoy the journey of discovery. To understand why we are here. To understand what it is that's going on in us. To look at ourselves in the mirror. That needs the trust. And if we're in somewhere else, expectation, da-da-da-da, it's much more difficult. I'm always very impressed by the story of Eckhart Tolle that he wrote in his book The Power of Now, that you may have read it. And it's just a few lines at the beginning, a page at the beginning, where he just tells his story, where he was a student in Cambridge University and suffering from deep depression and deep suffering and despair. And on the point of suicide. And as he was contemplating this deep, dark despair and the suicide mind in him, the thoughts of suicide, that he wanted to end it all, suddenly he realized there was something in him that was able to contain, to look at, the mind that was saying, I want to kill myself. Something was saying, was knowing this. Something was in him was watching and was able to say, I'm depressed and I want to kill myself. If the whole of him had been depressed and want to kill myself, he would have just killed himself. There would have been nothing there to separate, nothing to watch. But he realized there was something in him watching or able to look at the depressed mind. And that was such a strong realization that he fainted, he collapsed, he fainted, and he woke up the next morning in utter bliss and ecstasy. And he spent, according to his story, he spent years after that wandering the parks of Europe, sitting on park benches, and in total bliss, abandoned. And then from there he became a spiritual teacher. He never heard of the Buddha, only afterwards he tried to understand what happened to him. This story is important or interesting because it tells us that we have to let go. It tells us that the real deep change can happen when we just abandon, we just let go, we just drop out of the story. If he'd sat there with expectations, I want to be free and happy and ecstasy on park benches, it would be the depression that would create those expectations, and he'd be still depressed. It's the fact that had a realization and trusted it and let go into it and dropped into it that created this dramatic, in his case, dramatic transformation. So, question is, what do we trust? What do we have faith in? And the Dharma is not dry. It may not seem as if we are in ecstasy here playing music to the feet of the Guru. But there is quite a lot of juice in the Dharma. And we already touched on it in the refuge, taking refuge in the Buddha, in the Dharma, and in the Sangha. And here is a place where it's as close as we get to really acknowledging our Guru, acknowledging our deep teacher. But it's not the Buddha that we acknowledge as our Guru. It's, I hate to say it, but the Goddess, the Shekhinah, the place in us, the pure place that is sitting in our, the Goddess is sitting, Bata'im Shalanu, in ourselves. That's the Buddha mind. The Goddess, because I think she's more female than male, the awakened mind. But it's the, we take refuge, our Guru is what we really are. And there's a lot of juice in that. Our Guru is the truth. Truth is a very big word, Dharma. I wouldn't worry about what it means. But something authentic and deep and beyond the usual mind, there is Guru. And we are not invited to believe in the awakened mind. We're not invited to believe in the Goddess that sits in the ta'im, in the cells of our being. But we're invited to take refuge. I think much more relevant to us, to trust in, to take refuge in, to see this as our home, to see it as a shelter, to see it as being contained and held. That's all. Not to believe in it. Anyway, we can't believe in it. Believe in what, exactly? How do we believe in the awakened mind when we don't know what it is? But we can feel held by something bigger than us. We can feel held by something pure, by the moments that we already know, by the moments of chesed, of grace, of silence, of peace. We all have these in our life. They're the entrance gate. So, how do we apply this in our practice, the trust? What does it mean to trust? It brings us into the present moment. We basically need to trust our present moment experience here together. We basically need to trust what's really happening to us. When we do this, reducing the pressure of things having to be better, pressure of the future, the pressure of expectations, the pressure of the way things ought to be, the pressure of what I want to happen, reducing the addiction to outcomes, means to totsot. If the back pain doesn't go, then the whole thing doesn't work. That's a kind of addiction to an outcome. We want the back pain, where the pain in the back is for us then a kind of test, mivchan, we should put on ourselves. If the back pain doesn't go, then the whole thing isn't worth it. So that's pressure. We reduce the pressure, we reduce our need for outcome, for results. We acknowledge that there is pain in the human life. We acknowledge that things are not easy. We acknowledge that there is painful experience. But all of that together, we just trust. We trust that that's the nature of things. We trust the process. We trust the path. I'll give you some examples. We can sit here and breathe. And then after three breaths, the mind goes off. And we start thinking about what I want to do when I finish the retreat, and what kind of person I want to be, and what I'm going to say to my partner when I leave here, and how I want the lunch to be tomorrow, and all of that. And suddenly we spent 20 minutes gone, not here. So we can then, the next thing is, oh, I'm no good at this, I'm a total failure, it doesn't work for me, I only have three breaths, and then my mind is taking over again, and the whole thing is for someone else. Look at these great yogis around, let them do it. I've only got 4.5 more days to go, so maybe I'll manage to sit it out, but I'm getting out of here. The usual mind. It's just the usual mind. But if we trust, how can things look different? We trust there is breath. There is the breathing in me. I'm breathing 3 or 4 breaths. This is where I'm concentrated. This is where I am. The mind comes in. Oh, okay. This is the mind. The mind is coming with its story. The story seems very strong because it's taking me over and bringing me somewhere else. There is story, there is my usual thinking. That's what it is. That's the picture. I trust that usual picture. That's, I'm in a retreat, and here is my picture. 3 breaths, lots of thoughts. 3 breaths, lots of thoughts. If you like, that's the nature of things right now. What's wrong with that? Who says that's a problem? That's our starting point. That's our raw material, our Chomer Gelem. If we trust that that's the way things are, then it takes off the pressure. It takes off all the constructions that we build around it. We look at our narratives. We look at our thoughts. We look at our life with trust. That's the way things are right now. I trust the way things are. If we look carefully at our thoughts, we see there is huge power in habit. It's not our fault. We didn't design ourselves, right? I don't know who designed us. Maybe made a few mistakes. But we, if you like, it's karma. Doesn't matter what it is. But the fact is that the retreat is showing us a little window on ourselves, on the power of the thinking mind to take us over, on the difficulties we have in concentration, of where we go when we go inside ourselves, of looking at ourselves in the mirror and what's happening. The retreat is doing it. We're doing it. So if we have trust, we shift it all and say, it's the retreat. It's my experience, my honest experience, and I'm with it. I trust it. It's all right because it's the way it ought to be. It's the way it is. It's what's happening. I trust it. I don't need to think that it's all wrong and that I'm wrong and the retreat is wrong and the Buddha is wrong and it's got to be something else. That trust is a power, because as soon as we can see, oh yeah, here is some breath, here is thinking, here is breaths again, here is body, Here is pain in the body. Here is a moment of relief. Here is softness. Here is quietness. Here is disturbance. Here is lunch. What's wrong with that? But it needs us to change the view, to trust it all and say, here I am, I'm going to drop into this process. I will just drop into the process. Like, let go and drop into the process and let the process take me. For that, we need to trust. When we were giving instructions today about walking meditation, I mentioned the image of the microscope and how when we can look more closely, more intimately. The intimacy is another example where we need trust. We don't usually think in the language of intimacy. We think intimacy with somebody else, with our partner, or with our family. We don't so much think about intimacy with ourselves. But intimacy with ourselves is another place where we need trust. Almost we need love. Love and trust are very close. We need the trust and the love to really get close to ourselves and discover what's there. Mindfulness, tsumat lev, mindfulness, keshev, is a process of intimacy. It's a process where we open our experience to ourselves. This needs a trust. This needs some love. This needs some kindness to ourselves. Intimacy is not about distance and not about anger and not about reaction. It's about trust and love and attention. When we think of intimacy, this word, it has in it this also mothering feeling about it. It's getting close, getting right in there close to our genuine experience. And that needs the trust. It needs some love. It needs some softness. One of the places which stops us from trusting is our fears and our concerns and anxieties and our armor, our shirion. If we remember to practice trust, to be more trusting, to allow our experience, little by little, the armor gets thinner. Again, we can even trust the armor. I once saw a very nice description of armor, of a shirion shelanu. It's from a psychologist that said, actually, have you ever looked at the armor of a tortoise? How beautiful it is, what beautiful colors, what beautiful shapes is the shell of a tortoise. A tzav, the shirion of the tzav. It's so beautiful. It has so many colors. We can even trust our armor. It's also arrived through karma. But we know that we don't really need it so much. We can slowly, slowly let it go, and the trust does that. It begins to melt our armor. We begin to feel maybe all the time. When I'm thinking that the world is somehow against me, ha'olam negdi, you know, it doesn't give me the money that I need, it doesn't give me the happiness I need, it doesn't give me the... It's always a bit threatening, that I'm always feeling I have to be careful, especially when walking down the street in South Tel Aviv, or I'm always have to be watchful that someone's not doing something to me, taking something from me, you know, etc., etc. We begin to realize maybe the world is not against us. Maybe that's something also, a habit built from karma and armor. Maybe I look at that. Maybe the world is with me, not against me. How do I know that? Maybe It's the usual mind that thinks the world is against me, and another mind will show me that the world and me are together, and the trust is the engine that drives that realization, the engine that brings me to another place where I see, actually, the world is not against me. The world and me are one. We are together, the world and me. Hand in hand, we're together. That sense is trust. We can't push ourselves to a new mind, a different mind, aggressively. We need softness and allowing to get there. I have a quote here from someone who, just writing in a journal, some personal experiences. And just when he started to meditate, he came up with some experience which is very much like an example. He writes that he started to meditate, and he says it happened to me that for a very long time my attention stayed with sadness, with sorrow, also with desire, and also with attachment, the things that I wanted. But I think that the intensity of silence in meditation is connected to an unconditional acceptance of what appears in the field of perception. Sorry, I jumped. He says, it happened to me that my attention stayed with sadness and sorrow and desire and attachment for a very long time. But while this attention was following the difficult situation, there came a point at which it was unbearable for the mind to be present any longer. The mind could no longer witness all the contradictions and the frustrations and the impossibility. And it was then that a change took place, spontaneously, unexpectedly, unpredictable. It brought with it all the strength of freedom and joy. I could never have produced it. It came by itself. I think the intensity of silence in meditation, connected to an unconditional acceptance of whatever appears in the field of perception, in an awareness that does not choose or judge, was what did this. The change was important. It opened a door that I would call trust. Trust regarding what is. Trust that in what is, there is all that is needed. All I have to do is live without resistance, to be aware of what is going on. And I think that's a very beautiful summary of his experience, to live without resistance. I have a bunch of chickens in my house, in my garden. I have 15 chickens, and they have a chicken house. And every morning I go and feed them, and I'm amazed how I can stand there with the door wide open to the chicken house, and they wouldn't dream of running away. They don't even know that there's a door. They don't even know that the door is opened. And the few times that by accident, through kind of enthusiasm and excitement, one of the chickens has kind of shot out of the door, found itself somewhere else in an uncomfortable and unusual other place, and quickly turned around and shot back again. The world out of the chicken house is full of wonderful worms and insects and grass and food. Up to here, the chickens would have a wonderful life out there, grazing around, but they don't know that the door is open. And we're a bit like that. Somewhere or other, we need to go beyond the usual mind. And we need to have the trust to do it and to realize that there's a door open out there. And our problem is a little bit like the man in the trapeze, you know, who is hanging on the trapeze, and he kind of swings, and he has to let go of one in order to catch the next, and maybe there's no safety net underneath. And that's our problem. We need trust to let go there, the usual mind, and catch the next place. And the next mind, the different mind. And that's not about expectations. It's about letting go. It's about trusting that we can do it, trusting that we can let go of the old mind. I don't expect that we all, you know, this is not about being utterly radical and destroying the old mind, but in small ways, in our daily life, here in the retreat especially, moment by moment, we can say, yeah, the old mind, that's all right, that's the way things are, but what else is happening? What's underneath? What am I not looking at? What do I need to see? And it does go those kind of places like boredom, a pain in the back, tiredness, phenomena that come up through our biography. That's what's happening. These are not problems. These are the first whisper of another mind. These are the retreat starting to work and creating stuff for us to look at. And we have to trust that boredom, tiredness, pain, difficulty, lack of concentration, that's just what's happening. We trust that that's the process, that that's the retreat doing its job, that it's there because it needs to be there. It is what is. It's all that's needed, like this guy said. That's what's needed. At this moment, it's right. Tiredness comes up. That's what's needed. That's the truth. I have trust in the truth, and I will turn my eyes, my gaze, towards this truth that is coming up in me right now. And that's the trust. We can trust in things the way they are. They are quite magical as the way they are. They don't need to be something else. Thank you. So we'll take a few moments to sit quietly.